Welcome to RV Talk Radio. Here we talk about RV living, RV lifestyles, and RV travel. We also celebrate the RV lifestyle that gives us the chance to do outdoor activities that we couldn't do in a normal lifestyle. So thanks for joining us. Grab yourself a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, and let's talk about RVs. Hello, everyone. This is Rob from RV Talk Radio. This is episode 98. Glad to have you. Really appreciate having you here. I got to tell you, it's really great to see the growth of the channel, the subscriptions of the podcast. It's been wonderful. And I only have one person to thank, and that's you. So thank you very much. Interesting week going on. We've been kind of connecting with some other podcasts and other radio shows and had a little bit of observations about some of them. And so let's start the show. Well, I have to laugh, or I don't know. I get kind of confused out there, and I'm kind of sharing this with you. I'd love to hear your comments and stuff. But so when we do our show on lifestyle, we talk about the different lifestyles, whether it's van living, whether it's fifth wheels or motorhomes or million-dollar machines. And so sometimes when I'm talking about stuff, about equipment and stuff, because we have fairly new stuff. We have a 2013 Montana. And I constantly get comments of people saying, well, Rob, you got the money to do all that kind of stuff and add equipment. And so I have folks that give me the impression that we have, we're more middle class, let's say. Okay, let's just leave it at that. However, I watch other shows, and for example, I was watching this RV show, the RV Show USA, and they have a podcast show too, and very commercial-ish. However, very knowledgeable people seem like very nice and pleasant people, and they're doing a great job. So, yeah, don't. And of course, they. I talked to them a little bit on stuff, and they're like, "Who are you?" So I'm just a peon to them. But that's all right. Anyway, but when I'm watching their show, I'm kind of like, oh, gosh, people, I guess I'm at a low-income kind of situation because some of the stuff just floored me. For example, they're talking about a roofing product. I guess I'm not bad-mouthing the product. The product's awesome and stuff. So they got this roofing product, and certain dealerships will put it on for you, and it's got a lifetime warranty on it, which is great. I mean, there's no doubt leaks and water and stuff is definitely a terrible thing for RVs. So anyway, as we're talking about it, I'm just like, I'm trying to like, well, how expensive is this stuff? And so for the average, like my Montana, probably, I guess it goes on in a gray color, and then it has to be painted to be white. Anyway, so they're kind of quoting like $6,000 and above to have this done. But it's got a lifetime warranty. And so I'm sorry, but I guess I'm not that well-to-do, folks, for those of you who think that we're at a different level or something. To me, that seems like a lot of money. And so I guess that's probably the difference between different shows and stuff like that. We've kind of stayed private. We used to do some things with other companies. And you probably remember in the days we did things with RV Lock and we looked at other things. And I don't know, they just always seem to go in a way that, I could even tell when the people were giving us feedback, like, that's all you talk about is RV Lock, or maybe you're talking about Go Mechanic and all these things that we used to jump in. And, we've just kind of found that it's more of a headache and also causes people to not like the show if we're plugging in all these commercials and pushing a product. But we'll still do it. I mean, we're a radio show, so when that stuff comes up. But we do, I mean, we'll, like last episode we talked about a company we ran into, and I kind of enjoy that because there's no money exchange. There's we're doing it because we like one another and we help each other's channels, and we earn our income through YouTube and other means, and this is not the only radio show we do. So we kind of combine everything to work together, and so we don't have that big draw of trying to get commercials. And commercials mean money or exchange of ideas to promote each other's channels. And we'll still be involved in that kind of stuff. But it just really stood out to me because probably because we don't do that in this show. But we have. And so I felt like, to pushing these products that apparently I am poor. I mean, I have two cars and a house and a RV and a boat. I think I was doing all right, but I'm sorry, but that kind of money still makes me kind of like, ugh, oh my gosh, what's wrong with just getting up on your roof, washing it, and applying Dycor in different areas and painting it yourself? I guess I'm pretty low class, I guess, but that's how I got to look at it. But, so the other thing we really enjoy doing is talking to just real people that are out there doing different things. You know, we've had several people on the show, like Less Junk, More Journey. We've had The Freedom Theory, and we've had a couple other couples, and we got some new ones coming up if I ever get around to getting the darn interviews done. And just talking about real life. And so the other thing, I don't know about you, but like there was a RV park that they're talking to, and I know these are standard numbers, but they still shock me, and I don't know why. I guess I still think gas should be 59 cents a gallon, but when they're talking about RV parks that are $45, $50 a day, I don't know, for some reason it still shocks me. I guess I'm cheap, and I'm just how I am. But in a week's time, that's $350, and that's, you may as well have a house mortgage if you're going to spend that kind of money. I guess that's why I did that anyway. But the other thing is, and I guess it's like our boat. When we put it up at Lake Powell and things like that, it costs us almost $400 a month just to put it in a slip. So I still think that's expensive. So I don't know. I guess there's something wrong with me. But I guess I like to get a lot of value of all of our dollar. And that's probably why I really appreciate, you wouldn't believe it, but when I'm hearing about people trying to find ways to do their RVing in an affordable way and lifestyles, and also utilizing like memberships and stuff like that, like 1,000 Trails can help you really keep your costs down, because this stuff can really add up. Of course, now RV parks have weekly and monthly rates, and that can significantly be better. But I know when we were down here in our last year before we bought our house, we're paying about $950 plus. A month just for the space we had over in Fort McDowell area. So, I don't know, it just seemed like a lot of money. And it seems like sometimes these shows, I guess that's my big beef, is a lot of these shows that are regular shows and these regular YouTube channels, it's just constantly, they're talking about products, but they're really trying to sell you the product. If you watch some of these channels, they'll immediately say, we have a link below from Amazon where you could buy it yourself, and it helps us out. And the same thing with these radio channels, they're pushing these products because they're promoting them, or they're getting something in return. And whether it's money or whether it's exchange of traffic and stuff like that. So keep that in mind when you're watching these shows. Is I think I notice it more because I do these shows. And like, for example, right now I have a radio broadcast group that's trying to work with me. And it's funny. They immediately is like, oh, we just want you to put our stuff on your network. why would I want to do that? I mean, we work hard to get our listeners, and we're kind of picky about, you know, making sure that the stuff is, you know, significant to our whatever channel we're doing our podcast or radio shows on. And so, you know, we're always got someone knocking at the door. And I've actually found myself kind of ignoring it a little bit just because I know the relationship will be, well, we want this and you not this. And then a couple of weeks later, it's like, well, we didn't sell enough stuff, or we sold enough stuff and we want to move on and see ya. Thanks for letting us be on your show. Use and abuse kind of thing. And so it happens over and over and over. And so that's just something that we've noticed in the industry. But do be aware that when you're watching these shows, are they talking about products? Are they informing you about products or doing a DIY RV show on a product that really they're more interested in sponsorship or you buying the Amazon link down below? And so are their intentions good or not? And maybe they're both. They can be. But I found it, uncomfortable a little bit when I was watching some of these shows. But at the same time, I appreciate, because once you start doing a more commercial kind of broadcast or a podcast, then you have to start getting into your timing. And then you have to, like us, we can run our show any way we want. But, you know, as you become an affiliate at other shows and stuff, time sequences are really important. It's like, okay, this segment's got to be only 10 minutes and no longer, so we can plug in commercials. Or we're going to let this section of the show go to another show. It's got to be no more than 14 minutes and things like that. And when you start seeing that, you know the motivation is questionable to me. So, it's just food for thought. And sometimes I wish we were that way, and other times I'm glad we're not, because we've been there before. So, we'll probably keep the format we got. But, I was busy. I really enjoyed watching RV Show USA, they call themselves. It's the first time I've actually watched them before. When you're really covered or blanketed in the RV industry, you can become quite knowledgeable, and that's very helpful to a lot of new people. My biggest worry is sometimes that they get out of touch, and all these new people coming in all have different kinds of issues or concerns, and so that's why all the different shows are important to watch the different flavors. And we're just like another flavor. So, man, let's move on. Well, I admit I'm one of the followers of Freedom Theory, and I get a, and we've met them and had them on our show before and stuff. So, nice people. And one of the latest crises they have, and it's they have a very crisis show anyway, but very cute. Is they broke their slide, and that's one of the things I really, really dislike about RVs. Is cause and effect. It's like, for example, we had we're at a rest area, and we wanted to make lunch or something. Well, we have to open up our slides a little bit to even get into the kitchen and stuff. So we'd park as far away as we can in the trekking area so we could open the slides to have lunch. And sure and heck, during the drive, one of our remotes to our television fell on the floor and fell in such a way that when I opened up the slide, as it was opening, it caught the remote and crushed it. It sounded terrible. And it didn't hurt anything. Luckily, it gave way. But if it didn't give way, it would have damaged the slide mechanism. And that's the same thing that's kind of happened with those folks. They had they're opening or closing a slide and forgot to close a drawer on one of the cabinets. And as the slide came in, it caught it, and then it caused it to go off its track and also break the motor mechanism. So I guess that's one of the things I really, really hate about RVs is if you forget one little thing during your processes, the damage can be horrendous. And so I'm definitely a believer in RV checklists, but they just don't seem convenient. It's not like when you're traveling, it's kind of like, oh, let's take a break. You don't have things planned out. Sometimes things just happen. Maybe you pull over and do things, or maybe you have a flat tire and you've had to pull over to change a wheel or something. So you go through procedures or open up cabinets and do things that are not of the norm. And so you don't necessarily follow a checklist, you might say. And so that causes you to wave from your normal processes, and you leave a drawer open, or you forget to close something, or you didn't lock the refrigerator doors right, or the cabinets, like in our RV, we put little Velcro strips around the cabinets to keep from swinging open. Another thing, when we're first traveling, we didn't do the little Velcro strips around the thing, and we had a large bowl that was glass, I guess, whatever, but pretty beefy, fall out of the cabinet, come and hit the dining room table, which put a little gouge in it, and just disintegrated, and we had glass everywhere. But I guess that's one of the things I'm really irritated when I'm RVing is processes. So when you're looking at an RV, I guess this is where I want to go with this, is you gotta look at the what's cumbersome about the process of opening and closing the slides and using it. And what if, I would almost say, pull cabinet things open and stuff, and then activate slides and stuff, and see how mechanically involved it is to go through your processes of moving and traveling all the time. And be aware of, like, hey, if you leave one cabinet open and the slides come in, you could literally rip out a wall. Those are really, really important things to look at. And it's, you don't really think about that when you're buying an RV. It just happens once you have the RV and you get out there and life happens. You know the old saying, S happens, and it does in RVing. And I do notice that some of the newer RVs seem to be more inclined to think about the possibilities of things happening. But older RVs can be a little cumbersome, and they can also have funny mechanical things about them that if you don't follow procedure, you could literally really damage your RV. And usually it happens in a place that it's not convenient. You're pulling over to have lunch and you damage a slide at lunch and you're halfway between one spot and another in Alaska, you got a problem and you're not necessarily going to find someone who can help you. When I was watching the Freedom Theory, luckily they were fairly close to an RV repair place, and turns out they actually found one that was quite universal and quite friendly and was quite helpful to them. And you can't necessarily keep your RV on their lots. They were fortunate to be able to stay do that. But a lot of RV places do have places where you can get your rig worked on, and you can stay. They have actually spaces or something, power set up where people can stay on the premises. So I don't know what the legalities of that is. I don't know if that's a problem for RV repair places or not. Of course, it just takes up space, and plus you got, you know, people living on your property when you're trying to keep it secured. that could probably be an issue too. So anyway, I don't know if I'd want to have a repair shop where you actually had somebody hanging over your shoulder the whole time trying to get something fixed. And it's like, maybe they do that on purpose where they don't want you to be there. I wouldn't blame it because some people can be quite irritating. But yeah, when you're buying an RV, look at all the mechanics of it, especially when you're going through the process of closing and opening your RV, as far as winterizing it, as far as opening it up, closing it, having lunch in it, stopping at a rest area, and then going through that procedure. What kind of devastation could you do if you don't follow one of the procedures right, you forget to close a drawer, forget to close a cabinet, forget to put straps on your cabinet doors, you really need to look at that, because that really could hurt you during your traveling time. And I've seen it time and time again. And just food for thought. So the other day, I've met people that have done this before, and I've actually done it once, and I believe me, I only did it once. Is when you're traveling with an RV, like a trailer or a fifth wheel, and you have pets, do you make the pets ride with you in the cab of your truck, or do you let them or keep them in the RV while it's moving? And I know this is kind of a controversial gray area. Some people actually have more than one pet, or like, not Sherry and I, we had a cat and a dog. But I've seen people with 3, 4, 5 dogs and cats in their RVs. And the only way they could travel is actually have them ride in the RV or the fifth wheel or trailer. And, of course, when we had a motorhome, I mean, they rode in that, too. And so, what's the difference? But I know the first time we went RVing in 2006, we tried to make the cat and dog ride in the back. And we did a half a day. This was in Washington State. Went up the I-90 Pass, Squamish Pass, and camped up at Lake Easton area. And I think the dog got sick and the cat was terrorized, and we learned right away that we needed to let them ride up in the truck. Anyway, I don't know, health reason wise and stuff. I mean, I've never actually ridden in the back of a fifth wheel while it's in motion, but I imagine it can be quite harrowing, experience as it's, swaying and moving around. And, maybe some pets are good at that and stuff, but I still recommend that you have carriers. Now, Cinder, she just has the whole back seat to herself. And yeah, I understand some people don't have trucks like that and stuff. And our cat, we would put her in the carrier next to Cinder in the back seat. And that's just how it was. When we left, that's how they traveled. We just didn't put them in the RV. And I don't know if there's any laws involved in that. Maybe there should be. Of whether you should let your pets ride in those places. But I guess it's also like, all right, if you're driving a 40-foot motorhome and the animals are running freely in there, what's the difference? I don't know. Maybe suspension-wise and things could be different. But yeah, not to mention that you get on a windy road or bumpy road and stuff, that your animals could actually get sick. And that's not fun either. But I love to hear your comments and your solutions. And maybe you just say, oh, mine are just fine back there. And others say, no way, we bring them up front and put them in carriers. So I'd love to hear your feedback on that. I'd love to hear if you know any rules and regulations about what's proper to do with our animals when we're traveling. That would be an interesting subject. And hopefully I can find an expert out there that might be able to share some insights about that. So yeah. Pets, animals, traveling, should they be in the RV or should they be up front in your truck? I'd like to hear that. So I have a subject here I kind of like to talk about. It kind of brings out the good and bad in people, but it's kind of a mixture of two things. One is prepping or being prepared for a disaster. And two is people that hunt or eat meat and things like that. So even though Sherry and I, you've heard that we've become vegan, and we call it like an 80-20 vegan, and it's a program we actually started. So sometimes we go out there, and sometimes it's hard to avoid things like milk and cheese, and it's okay. But I don't want to talk about that. Actually, what I want to talk about is RVing, for example. Our RV is up in Central Oregon, and I wish it was closer in some cases, but we, and I did a video on this too, is we literally always keep extra case of water sometimes as much as we can. If we're in it, I mean, we also got the water that's in the tank and stuff. But we also keep at least a week's worth of dried food in it, or one of those survival things, in case of a disaster. And RVs actually, in some cases, can be a good refuge, if you want to say, if something was to happen. And let's say something terrible happened in California, and you lived in California, and you want to get away from it and still have a place to live, and you had an RV, it's an ideal mobile home to get away from an area that's under crisis, not to mention hurricanes and things like that. So prepping, I highly recommend it, and even if you're in an RV, to at least give yourself a week or two of dried food or something like that, and also extra water. Keep it in your lower section of your RV or in cupboards or something like that, where you're carrying extra water beyond what's in your tank. One is your tank might be low when a crisis happens, or two, maybe the water gets contaminated or something like that, and you can't pull water to put in your tanks. Having spare water, you know, is really no excuse not to do it. It's so easy to do. And it comes in so many different forms. You can get it in bottles or bigger bottles, 2-gallon bottles, and just put it away somewhere, hide it somewhere. It's not like you know, it doesn't take up a lot of room. It is heavy, but it's advisable that you did something like that. And of course, that applies to your house too. So Sherry and I, we keep 2-week supply of dried food, and you can just buy the kits. And we also keep several cases of water in a spare bedroom. And yes, we are weaponized. And there's another area. So prepping, weapons, and hunting or eating meat. So I know it's really easy for people to judge people that hunt. And I've been a hunter for years. I don't hunt anymore. And I have a friend that's on Facebook that goes hunting every year, and he always shows his deer and all that stuff. To me, it doesn't bother me. And I know him really well. When he gets a deer, nothing goes to waste. And so as far as the hunting regulations up in Washington, my dear friend Don is up there. He is a very good hunter. Two, when he hunts and shoots something, he uses a firearm, never misses his target and hits it direct, and it's a quick thing. And he takes really good, has a lot of pride in what he shoots. He kind of likes to go for a trophy deer, but he eats everything. And I'm not sure what he does with the skins and stuff like that, but I'm sure if he gets a really good deer, he may have it mounted or, you know, taxidermy service. But some folks say, oh, that's terrible. Or if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, a lot of people are against animal cruelty, and I understand that. But, you know, let's take those three subjects: prepping, firearms, and knowing how to hunt, let's say, or firearms. And there was a disaster. Let's say I'm on right now. Let's say all of a sudden we have our power grid go down. And, you know, that can happen in another state and still affect you in a state that's a couple states away if the power grid's hit right. It could affect the Southeast big time here. Anyway, who's going to be more popular? Those people that are advocates, those people that have spent so long and have no idea where our meat comes from, or they didn't prep or didn't prepare at all, didn't put anything in their cupboards to prepare for time being out. Maybe they don't have any way to cook. No propane stoves, which also I didn't talk about that, but it's always good to have like some of those propane canisters and a Coleman stove. Of course, in an RV, you kind of have that, but being mobile too, or in a house, it's a good idea to have a propane stove and some canisters and stuff so you can heat water, because it's going to be all about water and food, really, and protection. And so suddenly, these people that we look down on, these people that we scarf at, that, oh, they kill animals, or they have firearms and stuff like, and I'm talking about responsible people, they're going to be the heroes. The whole world would change. It'd be inside out. You know, all of us that sit around and judge these people, even these people with RVs that are $1 million RVers and stuff, well, suddenly when they can't fix their RV and they can't pull it into a, and they can just, you know, throw the cash out and have someone fix their RV and they don't know how to do any of that stuff, they're going to be hurting puppies. And suddenly, all these people that are hands-on and DIY and the ones that can actually do this stuff or do-it-yourself projects, they're going to be the heroes. And I think it's important that we never forget that. Never. I don't think that looking down at someone that likes firearms or looking down at someone that likes to hunt and does it properly, the proper hunter, the ones that follow the rules and the regulations and stuff, and those that enjoy firearms that do it as a hobby responsibly, and most people do, and those, you know, those that prep and those that keep spare water and things like that. First of all, who are we to judge, I guess? Of course, on our talk show, you think we judge all the time. We just talk about stuff. I think some of that stuff's getting lost as far as those kind of skills. Just like, you know, when I talk about... there's not a lot of people that can do skilled labor anymore because everybody's trying to get degrees and think they'll be millionaires by the time they're 30, and it's just not true. But these people that have skills, the whole world would turn inside out. And we're so close to that, it could happen, and you see it when the hurricanes come and just hits a certain section. But you know, as soon as this power grid goes down, well, say goodbye to Rob's podcast, say goodbye to communicating with the world, say goodbye to television and even radio broadcasting would be an issue. Food, say goodbye to grocery stores. They can't refrigerate anything. Suddenly, you're on your own. And some people will say, well, I guess I really wouldn't want to be alive anyway. Well, it's our human nature to survive. And so, anyway, I don't know. I guess a lot of times I get frustrated with the people that judge these folks that are, I'll even call them rednecks, you might say, prepared, hands-on people that know how to at least survive a little bit, And of course, it kind of falls into these people that know how to boondock, but they're limited in what they could do. A lot of them, they may use the solar and stuff like that, and that's a good thing. But generators may be an issue because of fuel. Fuel comes out of a tank and it's got to be pumped into the pump, and a pump is electric. Pretty soon, getting fuel will be a problem. So if you're boondocking, eventually, you're not going to be able to move your rig anymore. Fuel will be scarce. So, I don't know. I guess if you judge these people in a negative way, I would think twice, because if something happened, you'd want them as your best friend. That's the first thing. Second part is, there's a lot of things that if you're not that kind of person but can adapt a little bit, then take the time to do a little bit of prepping. Take the time to put spare water and stuff. At least be able to hold out for at least 2 weeks while the power grid might be getting repaired and stuff. If it's that kind of situation, that's good. If it's long-term, you got a problem. But, everything would be harder. If you don't know a little bit of first aid, or you can't handle seeing the signs of blood or someone getting hurt, you don't know how to do first aid, and basic things like that, or learning CPR and things like that, you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a big problem. And, you know, there's a lot of crises going on in the world. I'm not talking gloom and doom and stuff. It could happen from storms. It could happen from a solar flare. It could happen from terrorist hits our power grid. Or the biggest thing is cyber attacks and things like that. And I'm not even talking about war and things like that, but this stuff could happen. And the best case scenario is temporary. The worst case scenario is a long term. And you will find society and things reverse. And suddenly you got to protect where you live, protect the people you love, feed the people you love, and understand that you may have to eat birds, or you may have to eat a chicken, or kill a pig, or kill a deer, or something like that. Do you even know how to do that? Could you do it? And how would you prepare to meet? And you know, it's one thing to even have all that kind of stuff and not get yourself sick. You can't just drink water anywhere. Can you pull water from a source and purify it? Those are pretty important things to maybe learn and maybe do a little research on and get better at. Maybe you don't like guns and stuff. I tell you one thing, if the grid went down for months and there's people out there who would be just like you that don't have any of these skills and they want to survive, they're going to start taking it. And how are you going to keep someone from taking what you prepared for? And it will come down to that. And people are just that way. Just look at hurricanes and the looting and things like that. You go, how can people do that? Well, if they're hungry enough, they'll do anything for their families and survive. So, yeah, I mean, it's food for thought. But RVing is a good way to understand some of the things you'll need to know. One is how to fix things. When you're boondocking, to get off the grid and things like that, there's great opportunities to learn of what you're capable of doing. And if you're not willing to do some of that stuff, make sure you're good friends with somebody that does know how to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I could see if something like that would happen, it would become communities where people have different skills. There's some people that can protect the colony, where another can help feed the colony, another can help build things and engineer for the colony, another can prepare food. It really will come down to shelter, food and water, and protection. That's going to be it. I mean, that's simple, but not so simple. So, you know, I monitor a lot of channels and I watch a lot of shows and stuff. And I watch all levels of different kinds of RVing. And one of the things I find uniquely entertaining is how people eat. So I was just watching a video of a gal that was showing what she was cooking for dinner. And it was one of these instant macaroni things. And her reasoning was, I cooked for my kids for years and I'm on my own. And I just don't like to cook and I don't want to eat out. And so one of the things I, maybe because I'm more aware of it lately, especially since Sherry and I have kind of changed our diet, and being that, you know, our age, whether you're 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, we are what we eat. There's no doubt. So one of the things I see a trend in as far as watching videos. Now, remember that only 5-10% of RVers or van dwellers and stuff actually do videos. So there's 90% out there that we don't really know what's going on. And I have met a lot of those 90% people, and they appear to be eating pretty regularly and healthy. But at least as far as some of the shows I'm watching, there's some really bad, it seems like, eating habits out there. One of the ones I see pretty good meals coming out of is like Freedom Theory. She likes to cook and she seems to be quite versatile as far as their diet. And health reasons probably promote that a little bit too. So folks that have health issues and stuff like that probably are more aware of what they're eating and their intakes are than folks that are just out living the freedom world of RVing, where I'm seeing, you know, pizzas and instant foods and stuff like that. So I don't know where I'm going with this, other than the fact that I think as an RVer, if you're coming out here and depending on what kind of lifestyle you're choosing as an RVer, I think you also want to keep in mind your nutrition. And the older you get, the more that you probably be more aware of your what you're eating. Of course, you know, if you watched our videos and stuff, Sherry and I over the years have gained weight and things like that. And pretty soon it's apparent that we either need to change our ways or we're not going to be around enjoy our grandchildren very long. So our awareness of food, in the RV, we're pretty fortunate with our fifth wheel. We have a pretty good sized refrigerator and kitchen area and stuff like that. So we stocked up pretty good with good foods and were able to store it properly. Some of the smaller rigs, I could see where they're confined with smaller ice boxes and stuff like that could be an issue. And having fresh fruits and stuff like that. But so many things you can buy frozen or canned now that are still fairly good for you. A lot of them will have a little bit more salt intake than you really probably want. But anyway, I think also if you're becoming an RVer, I don't know if enough people keep in mind their nutritional needs and what trying to eat healthy and trying not to eat out as much. Now, you know, if you're well-to-do and your pocket always has a few bucks in it and eating out is something you really enjoy, that can be good and bad too. But for those on a budget and things like that, if you really want to keep your costs down, one of the big things is not eating out. But at the same time, you should also try to make sure that you're eating well. If you're going to be out here, you may as well enjoy this lifestyle as long as you can, healthy. So when you're buying an RV, I think a big thing would be like, what's this kitchen got for me? I mean, can I store food in it? What other extra items I could buy, like a mobile freezer or ice makers and things like that, that would help me sustain a better eating lifestyle? So I can be an RVer for a long, long time without having health issues. Or if you have health issues and have a certain diet that you need to try to keep up on, do you have the equipment? Does your RV have the equipment to support your eating habits? Now, if it's junk food and things like that, I think almost any kind of RV can sustain that. But if you're trying to eat healthy and having a refrigerator and freezer and room to cook and prepare food, especially fresh vegetables and things like that, can you store meat? All those things are pretty important to consider when buying an RV. So it's kind of this food for thought. This is just kind of thinking out loud, but man, I sure see a lot of people just eating some real bad food. And, you know, they're probably perfectly happy and stuff like that. But the next video will come out going, I don't understand why I don't feel good. Well, I can understand it because I ate that way for a while too. And you just feel groggy and you're gaining weight and lazy and you're not getting headaches, not sleeping well. Having bathroom issues, things like that, all that, you know, can really be addressed by eating better and then finding out what's best for you. But yeah, keep in mind when you get an RV, what are you going to do for food short term and long term? I came across a report today, actually, about something that's kind of concerning, and it definitely would apply to the RVers. And I believe it's happening in Michigan, where it appears, and I'm just kind of just reporting on what this story is about, is they're having trouble. Well, a guy did a video about his wife and daughter that almost got kidnapped in a Target parking lot. And it appears that it's part of a Somalian kind of trafficking, women trafficking, prostitution thing, where they're kidnapping people. And his biggest concern is like they're in a parking lot and they just kind of drive up in their cars and surround the people and try to kidnap girls in this scenario. Which also means if it can happen to a Target parking lot, it can happen in a Walmart, it can happen anywhere. So here we go with a whole nother problem to worry about, is of course, safety, and especially in places like parking lots and stuff like that. And so I know a lot of folks that do, you know, the boondocking overnight in Walmarts and stuff. And if you're with your family, especially if you have your family and kids, if you're a woman, it shouldn't be this way, and I'm just saying it. I'd be on high alert and careful, and even give yourself some protection. But I know that a lot of times they say with RVers, they kind of want you in the back and kind of a low profile. But at the same time, that seems like a scenario where if this is a new growing trend, what it appears to be, where women trafficking issues are coming up in different states, and it sounds like it's a growing issue. It's something to be aware of, and unfortunately causes us to have to change our ways a little bit. But you know, if you're got a family and you have a woman with you, and you're doing an overnight thing in a Walmart or some of these other places that let you stay overnight, I would not make it real clear to everybody that may be watching you in the parking lot that you have a woman, or you are a woman by yourself, or your family, which could be your wife and your daughter, to advertise that that's the scenario, and certainly don't send out any indication that they're alone in the RV. And that's sad. And I know this day and age, it shouldn't be where a woman should have to worry about this thing, and because of equality and things like that. And I understand that. But at the same time, I just put myself in your shoes. If my wife, I'd certainly do what I could to make sure that I don't put her in a scenario that she can't control. And that doesn't make her any better or worse than me or all that. And I'm sure that there may be scenarios that men have these issues too. But in this case, it's awareness. So be aware that it's a growing trend out there that kidnapping women and young women for trafficking is out there. And it's, you're like, oh, I hate to, it couldn't happen to me. It sounds like this guy wasn't too surprised about that either. I think I'll go ahead and put a link to that video in our description and let you judge for yourself. But it's another awareness, or you know, part of that prepping thing. Can you protect yourself? And are you, imagine this is modern times. Imagine, like I said, if things weren't so modern, what life could be like. So, are you prepared for this kind of stuff? What are your habits? What are you doing when you're boondocking? What are you doing when you're staying overnight in these Walmarts and stuff like that, that could help protect yourself from having an incident like that? That'd be terrible. So yeah, anyway, once again, in the description, I'll put a link to that video. Well, that kind of wraps up this week's podcast. I appreciate you guys for listening. I know this maybe seemed like a gloomy and doomy kind of radio show. I didn't mean it to be. It was kind of meant to be helpful between the prepping and things that are going on out there. We monitor a lot of this stuff because we have other radio shows. Like we have a news show like Arizona Talk Radio and other shows too that we constantly monitoring stuff. And we get exposed to things that you may not catch on the internet because it takes a lot of time. And it's not exactly the funnest thing in the world, but it brings up some interesting subjects, and that's what we're all about here with this show. So anyway, I wanted to once again thank you. Our subscriptions are growing like crazy, and it's really nice to have new people on board. I hope you enjoy the show. We love your comments, good, bad, or indifferent. All we ask is you be professional. We also added to our description an email address if you want to talk to us directly, or you can talk to us from our Facebook page and the messaging. Great way to contact us if you're interested in advertising, or if you like to be on the show, that's a great way to contact us, is through the email. connection we put on there, which I've never put an email on there before. We'll see how that goes. But anyway, I hope everybody enjoys your RVing experience. If you be thinking about becoming an RVer, you won't regret it. And the biggest thing of all is be safe and have fun. Talk to you next week. Bye now. Hey, thank you so much for listening to RV Talk Radio. We love our listeners. Please take the time to like, subscribe, and share our videos all over the world. We'd appreciate that. Anyway, talk to you later. See you next week. Bye.